Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We're recording now.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. It's so funny because, like, when we sit down to do this, I think, oh, God, I haven't really got anything. I there's loads of things I think about all the time, but when it comes to record, they all leave my head immediately.
Do you not write it down in notes?
Yes, I do most of the time. But
I know, but we forget, and sometimes we're on a train, or sometimes you can't get your phone, or...
Yeah, and I think, oh, God, what was that thing I was going to talk about? And then, literally, in the last 10 seconds... they've all come flooding into my brain. Now I've got too many things to talk about.
And we have a special guest.
We do have a special guest this week. Say hello.
Hello.
Listen to that voice.
The deepest voice you've ever heard ever.
You've got Barry White in the room. Yeah. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes. I am Joel Douglas, offspring to Michael Douglas. Yeah. And I'm just going to help out with some reviews and suggestions. Yeah.
Yay!
Yay!
We've never had a family member on the podcast before.
And
this
also,
is a whole
there's
new
quite
thing.
A few things that Joel has contributed in the past, and there was one that I was going to talk about tonight, and there was a film that we watched that you've been working on at your new college. You've been working on a scene.
Yes.
You've been analysing
the scene. Analysing, yes. Dissecting. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But this was a film that I thought I'd seen. But it turns out I hadn't. And then we were lolloping around over Christmas, I was going to say, over the summer. And then why did we decide to watch it?
I think maybe you'd said it's one of the greatest films you'd ever seen or something. Or you can say it out loud.
There's 500 Days.
Yes, 500 Days of Summer. Yeah.
Yes, I only just watched this in the summer.
I think maybe you told us and said, you've got to watch this.
Yes, it was. I watched it so... when we came back from Saint-Tropez, I watched it before I went away to Morocco.
My God, what a summer you've had.
Yeah.
What a summer we had.
I wish it was 500 days.
Yeah.
I watched it then, and then I convinced you to watch it.
And
because
he's
I knew
convinced
you'd love
me,
the soundtrack.
And it was breathtaking.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I'd got it confused, I think, with my last five girlfriends.
Which, incidentally, to do, though, right?
Just so you know, is a film that I'm in. You know,
he
I was going to say
mentions this every week.
I starred in a movie. Yeah. I realised they only put me in it because my name was Michael Douglas, and they thought they might get him a better in across more cinemas. But I got it confused with that, and then The Summer of Love. I got it confused with that, which is an Emily Blunt film.
Yep.
Which is really good, by the way.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, but I think she's had quite a bit of work done because she almost looks like a different person.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think she's got.
Can I just say,
teeth.
If she has had work done, it's very good work.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I would say
she
looks
doesn't
fantastic,
look
doesn't she? Yeah.
Done.
That film, is it Edge of Reason?
Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow,
yes.
With Tom Cruise.
Oh, such a good one.
Oh, such a
She's
good
so
film,
badass
yeah.
in that film.
We've probably talked about it before, but that's a great film. And
But 500 Days of Summer, I need to discuss.
Yes,
because
okay.
What happened to Zooey Deschanel? So Zooey Deschanel plays the love interest of Gordon
Joseph. She plays Summer. She is Summer.
She is Summer, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's
Zooey.
Yeah, isn't she?
Zooey,
she
is.
Thank you.
That's quite a strange name, isn't it? I've never heard of a Zooey before.
Well, I mean, obviously I have because she's been in quite a few movies, but it was way back then and then she disappeared.
She is so gorgeous.
She's so gorgeous, isn't she?
She's perfectly cast.
And hypnotic and vulnerable and difficult.
But it's totally believable. Why he loves her so much. Like, you don't need to be convinced. They are a perfect match. And she is just slightly better looking than him. Enough for you to find the whole thing believable. Just going back to that film that I worked on, My Last Five Girlfriends, I know
Should
that
we just
I was
talk
in.
About it again?
No, but there was the big problem with the film is the guy who played the lead in it, clearly, in my opinion, was not nearly good looking enough to have had these five girlfriends.
Yeah.
And when you see the girlfriends that are in it, you just think, how did you get her? How did you get her? Like, the whole thing just fell on its arse at that point. Mm. But this film is, you completely know what's going on. She holds all the cards, even just because of her beauty.
Mm.
And he's a handsome chap, you know.
She's just slightly mysterious.
Mm.
And I think at that age, when you're quite young, mystery is so appealing because, generally speaking, we all just lay all our cards out on the table. You know everything about me, overshare, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But she's just so confusing. And
anyway,
it's a love story.
Yeah, it really
is. All the ups and downs of the love story. But we were discussing today the editing and why the editing is so interesting. And what we'd like to do is to give you an example of why that is interesting before you watch the film. So if you haven't seen 500 Days of Summer, we would like you to think about this before you watch it. Because, Joel, what you said... So it's quite weird the way that it's shot out of order a lot of the time.
A good example is it begins on the 486th day of summer. Mm. So all of the shots in the film are all on a different day of summer.
And I just want to clear something up, because I didn't know this until I watched the film. I thought it had something to do with the period of summer, and it's not. The girl in it is
the
called
girl
Summer.
Is Summer.
So it's actually 500 days of his relationship with this girl, Summer. So, because when that appeared, I was like, I just assumed the film would be set in the summer.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with that.
Right, that's actually quite an interesting thing to bring up as well, because the day that their kind of romantic affair starts, if you count that, I think, 500 days on, it comes to the beginning of autumn.
Oh, does it?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
God, Joel. Nice. Yeah. I love talking about films with you.
I equally love it. But there's so every shot and every scene in the film is a different day of summer involved. And so they start, like I said, on day 486, near the end of that period. And it just begins to show an example of how they use the chronology of the film to make a much more affecting story. So there's a scene about 200 to 300 days on where him and Summer are in IKEA. He starts to try and play around, and he goes over to the kitchen section, starts playing with the sinks, and he's saying, "Oh, all these sinks are broken." And she kind of like does like a bit of like a pity sigh, and then walks off.
A slight raising of eyes.
Yeah, like a proper eye roll kind of situation, and you kind of find it a bit like flat, and you think, "Oh, okay, that felt like kind of a loose tangent." Then it immediately sort of jumps back about 150 or so days to when they first ever did a trip to IKEA together.
It's
sort of them kind of waltzing through the different sections and her making all of these different jokes and then him making jokes out of those jokes as well. And it creates this really, really lovely interaction between them where they're not quite on the fringe of a relationship yet, but they're in that lovely honeymoon period where they're so kind of infatuated.
but it's weird putting that after,
it is,
isn't it?
But it's so clever because I watched that scene afterwards, after the much more kind of depressing scene, and it didn't, that scene, while making me feel extremely good and sort of light, it didn't make me happy. Because I knew that wasn't it. Like that disintegrates. That stops after sort of a good 3 or 4 months. So it was kind of just like this feeling of I had to let that go before the film progressed anymore. Yeah. And then it proceeds to sort of jump back and forth further and further.
And I think what's interesting is that if they had put that before, you'd watch them so in love in IKEA at their first shop, and then have been hugely disappointed when they went back to IKEA and it wasn't as good. But because it was done this way round, you just assumed that they weren't getting on.
Yeah.
And then it jumps back and you think, oh, they did get on. So the pathos, pain.
Mm.
So you're watching something so cute and loving and romantic, but there's a pain attached to it. And because of the way that it's been edited.
Then you as the viewer hold on to that scene where they're really in love and going through it.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to let go of it, but you know it's got to go.
Yeah.
So they use the rest of the film to let you kind of say it's okay to move on from these things.
It is a brilliant, Brilliant film, I think.
It is good. Is this the first film you've seen where the timeline jumps around like that?
No, I've seen loads and loads of films that have done it before, but this is the first one which compelled me enough to consider it and why it matters. Yeah. Mm.
I think Pulp Fiction was the first one I'd seen where you were watching the end of the film at the start of the film. Do you remember where they're in that place and it's being held up?
You're so good at remembering things. Mm. I saw it once and I can't remember any of it.
Yeah, there's that bit at the beginning where he says, "I love you, honey bunny."
Yeah,
and he says, "Any of you motherfuckers?" And you watch that at the beginning, and then all of a sudden it cuts to them in a car talking about cheeseburgers and stuff. Yeah. You're not quite sure what's going on, and then at the end of the film, you realise you're back at the beginning again. It's the first time I'd seen that done with real power and really good effect. But you'd think, well, why does it work? You know,
and ultimately, it's a massive spoiler.
Yes,
like everybody always goes, "Oh, don't give any spoilers away." But sometimes a movie gives away a spoiler right at the beginning of the movie.
But if you think about how your mind works, your memory jumps around all the time, doesn't it? Mm. And I think sometimes in a movie that it gives you the freedom to allow it, I guess, it to freeform a bit.
Mm.
I don't know why it works, but it works really well. Mm. I love a time shift movie like that. I mean, Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind is another great example where the film starts in the middle of the film. Essentially, you know, and then you learn more about where it actually started from in the middle of
Is that film, both you know? Of your favourite film?
Oh, it's one of my favourites.
Yeah,
you know?
It's one of mine. I couldn't put it, I couldn't put any at top, but that's definitely close.
Well, it depends what day you're asked, I think.
Yeah.
What I would say is he's called Joel because of Joel in
because
that
of Joel.
Film.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, he was born at Christmas. He was going to be Noel. Because of Christmas.
Yeah.
But Deal or No Deal came really big and all I could think of was Noel Edmonds.
No, you're right.
And I thought, gosh, such an uncool
No, Joel man, is you know? Great. You so, are such a Joel.
I watched Eternal Sunshine around the time he was due to be born and it was just like, oh, yes, Joel. It's not Noel, it's Joel, you know.
Yeah.
And then there was a little boy on a bus who had a rucksack on and on the back of it his mum had written his name, which was Joel, and it was just like a sign.
That's
you
it.
Know?
I was it's
like,
a sign.
Shit. He's called Joel. Let's just hope he's a boy. 500 Days of Summer fits in to the category of how I measure films. Guess what it scores? You don't have to guess. 7.7.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I was going to put you through like some kind of weird guessing game. 7.7. As we know, anything over 7 can get a watch. Mm. But anything under 2 hours can also get a watch if it gets below 7.
Yep. Yes.
This is 1 hour 35 and 7.7.
1 hour 35 is
this is
perfect.
A dream film. So if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it, like you have no excuses not
Can
to
I
watch this film.
Quickly say something. That 1.5 hour theatre experience with no interval is also amazing. I would much rather go to a 1.5 hour long show and be home by 9:30.
Totally.
Would you?
Don't give me an interval.
Yeah, I don't want an interval.
I don't want
intervals
gin and tonic
ages.
With no
ice. No. Yeah. And in comedy, I don't want an interval.
No, I don't.
Just
no.
be funny for an hour and a half and I'd be really happy with that.
I often think about this and I think it's the venue insist because they get money for drinks. So I don't necessarily think the artist has got a choice. I think they've got to put a break in. Cause
except from you, because you will always take with you.
Yeah, I'll always take me on snacks, yeah. So 500 Days of Summer, it has Zooey. What's she called? Zooey
Deschanel.
God, so we've got to find something else that she's in and watch it.
There's loads of stuff.
Yeah, so she's got a sitcom called New Girl, which she's in.
Oh, is she New Girl? And Joseph Gordon-Levitt, is that his name?
Yeah.
I always want to call him Gordon Joseph Levitt,
but
he's Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
And he's also in Looper, which you've not seen. Is
he's a fantastic... Brief. Did he not write or direct? Or
He does directing as well.
Yeah, I think he did something on this.
Mm. Okay.
500 well, Days of Summer. He produced it.
He's absolute knockout. Do you know where it's on, Joel, where you can get it? It's on Netflix?
Yeah, well, it was on Prime and it's just gone off.
Okay.
So I think you'll have to rent it somewhere like Prime.
Okay, or iTunes or something like that. Or keep your eyes peeled for it.
I would like to talk about something else that Joel showed us the other day.
Yeah.
Because this absolutely blew my tiny mind.
It's not that tiny.
And the reason why I like 120.
What's that?
My IQ. Got it.
Did you hear that, ladies and gentlemen?
Got it tested.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. There are so many things we need to talk about.
Uh-huh.
16
16 personalities.
Yeah.
You told us to do that, Joel.
Well, can I just say, he
was the original one.
We have talked about 16 personalities before. Because I did it about 2 years ago and I talked about it in the pod.
Oh.
But we can definitely do a refresh because we've never done
we'll
it.
We'll do a refresh.
Together, yeah.
But this short, it was a short that by Paul Thomas Anderson directing, is something that I would never, ever, ever have watched off my own back. Mm. If it's not a Disney short, it's not in my remit. So I sat down with a completely open mind.
Mm.
But it was one of the most incredible visual feasts that I have ever got my teeth into. And I can't even quite explain what it is. But Tom York is amazing.
He's
Will
so
you
compelling.
Just explain what it is?
It's a 15-minute kind of experimental short film. Obviously, like you said, directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, who's actually done... He's done lots and lots of work before with...
What's your other favourite film that he did?
There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's also done work before with Johnny Greenwood, who was obviously guitarist and Radiohead.
Yeah.
And so I think they must have some sort of clique, which I'd love to be a part of.
He does lots
of
music videos, doesn't he? Because he does all of Haim's...
Mm.
Oh, does he?
Haim's videos,
because they were in Licorice Pizza as well.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, of course, yeah. That, he wrote and directed.
He directed that,
Okay.
But yeah, so it's a 15-minute short film, and it's all soundtracked. There's no talking in it. It's all soundtracked by Tom York's solo album that he released called Anima, and he selected three songs off it. One of them was Traffic. One of them was the final one, which is called Dawn Chorus, which has become one of my favourite songs of all time now, because I'd heard it before in different people's social media and stuff, and it would always kind of bored me because I didn't know anything about it, and I watched that short, and the last kind of 5 minutes come into play. The last 5 minutes, it gets really close, like you saw, it gets really close and intimate with this
and
one.
Can we... The dancer?
Yes.
Yeah, which is amazing. Who is his wife?
That's his wife.
Yeah, his new wife.
Yeah,
Tom York's wife, I should explain.
Yes.
Because when I was watching it, I was like, there is something. I mean, either I was thinking, God, this is like the curse of Strictly. These two look so intimate that if I was Tom York's wife, I'd be very jealous.
Mm.
And I thought, after a few minutes, God, maybe they're actually together because this looks way too intimate.
It's passionate.
Right?
Really.
But then I looked it up because I was like, I've got to find out who she is and are they together? And they are.
Yeah, well, it's great. It's really, on Netflix.
Yes, it's on Netflix. It's just 15 minutes long.
15 minutes long. And it's a piece of art.
It's a piece of art.
And the dancing in it and the choreography.
All the choreography.
The lighting
brilliant.
In it.
Mm. Mm.
The power. It feels quite kind of Soviet Union, Iron Curtain.
It's all shot in Prague.
It's all shot in Prague.
Yeah.
Well, you can't tell.
It was
really a phenomenal watch.
What's it called?
Anima.
Which is spelled A-N-I-M-A.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not Enema.
Oh, yes. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And it's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
Anyone will watch it.
Yes. And it's also very worth listening to the full album once you've watched the short film.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah.
That's a very good shout.
Did we talk about your book at all last week? We had Mel and Sean with us last week, our podcast kind of winners. We took for lunch. Weren't they nice?
They were so great.
Hopefully they're listening. So
they brought amazing suggestions.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get over the Yorkshire Pecorino, which quite hilariously we left in the fridge in your
studio
and came into the studio the next morning and the entire studio smelt of cheese.
Yeah.
Because we hadn't wrapped it properly.
I thought something...
God, it was amazing.
Passed away in my studio.
Yeah.
There was a... overwhelming strong smell of cheese.
It was fabulous.
But it was brilliant.
But they were lovely.
We're still piling through the brownies, so Reese has taken a little fancy to them. So it was absolutely great. But I don't think we talked about your book, which I think we should give it a mention. So the book Menopausing has
just dropped.
What's quite interesting is that I got a copy today, it was sent to me, and you said you'd signed.
Yes, and
it.
I have. But what I'm worried about is that, you know, I wrote something to you, Michael, which obviously I thought only you
would read.
Would see.
Mm-hmm.
And someone else will have been sent this rather racy copy of Menopausing.
Wow, I'm really looking forward to...
And you got a simple, just signed Davina one.
I did. I felt like... It's like a knife in the heart, to be honest, you know. When I opened it, I said...
I promise I did it.
I did a post on Instagram today where I said, Andy, film this. I want to say something nice about my girlfriend's book, you know. And I said, look what I've got, something in the post. And then I unzipped it and opened it and I said, I think I've got a signed copy. I think she's put a message inside it. And I opened it and went, oh, no, it just says Davina. And he went, oh, and I said, can we film this again? I can shot it again. It was very, very funny.
Someone will be going, I've been sent a copy and let's open it. Yeah. Oh, let's close it.
But it's brilliant. And you launched it in Bath over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it was really hard actually to launch it. It launched on the 15th and obviously... we were all in mourning and the Queen had died and we cancelled lots of things, lots of kind of press things that we were going to go and do and some talks we were going to do, one in Birkenhead, which we're rescheduling. But there was one in Bath this weekend that we couldn't reschedule. It was greatest nights ever. I mean, it was sold out. So we had, I think they'd sold like 1,200 tickets.
Yes.
But I think another, like an extra, hundreds of extra people came. It was full here and up here. It was absolutely electrifying. And I've got to say, big shout out to the five men who came.
Yes, I mean, I'm
supporting their partners.
Only five, really.
It was really sweet, actually.
Good on them.
But we laughed a lot. We got lots of very helpful information because Dr. Naomi Potter, who I've written the book with, who is a menopause specialist, she's an extremely fastidious and careful person. She would never say something that isn't absolutely factually correct. And the problem for us at the moment is that there's a lot of information out there that is not factually correct. But anything that you read in this book, Naomi will not let it pass if it's not right. And she was there giving all of her amazing medical knowledge. And then I was just there being quite naughty.
Yeah.
And
you're good at that.
Yeah, and me and Angelica Bell. Angelica was interviewing me. Yeah. She was really funny.
Yeah.
And Britta, my old nanny, was there. She's and she was my perfect husband when the kids were growing up. She just was like, if I'd fancied her, it would have been amazing. Yeah. We could have gone out or something because we were the best team ever. And I love her so much. Mm. She bloody fell in love with somebody who lives in Somerset, which was really annoying. But no, I'm really happy for her.
Took her away.
Anyway, she was there. So it was a really amazing night. But I'm very proud of this book.
I think what's interesting about it is there's the assumption that perhaps somebody else just wrote it for you or whatever. But I saw you night after night. You'd say, I'm going to go do 2 or 3 hours on the book. And I used to think, oh, really? Can you not just watch TV with me instead? So I had to make sacrifices of my own for this book.
And thank you, the women of Britain.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, good, good.
And also, I just want to say thank you, because you contributed to it.
Yes, I did a little page in this, and I did my own voice in the audio version. So if you want to go and listen to these dulcet tones talking about air and the menopause, then that would be a good reason to do it. But it's out now.
It is.
You can get it anywhere and everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah, great, right?
And I'm just going to quickly blow my own trumpet.
You know, please, that's why I wanted to do this.
Number 2 on the Amazon chart. Only beaten by Richard Osman, who... beats everybody, so I don't feel bad about that.
He's very tall, Richard Osman. I feel like there's some discrepancy with tall people are more likely to become, they find it easier to become successful, I think, than smaller people. This is a theory I have. So when I see tall people,
do you not find taller people have it easier in everything?
Yeah, I feel like that.
I think that people are impressed by height.
Yes, it's got like a presence,
the world
hasn't it? It walks into a room.
Heightist.
Totally. I need to do things to big myself up because I'm only 5'5".
But this is one of the things that I really, really like about you.
I have to put up in the effort.
And you always used to say to me, you might want me to cut this out afterwards, but...
Oh, here we go.
You always used to say that when you arrive somewhere and you are your height and people find out that you're a hairdresser, people have unbelievably low expectations of you.
Unbelievable,
Actually, you are, as everybody that listens to this podcast now knows, really a smart guy, right? And you educate yourself. You watch lots of documentaries and dramas. You listen to tons of podcasts and you want to learn. You're like a sponge for information. Yeah. so that when you do go to somewhere, people have such low expectations of you that you leave always. I have never left anywhere with you without at least five people coming up to me going, oh my God, Michael's amazing. Like, wow. Oh my God. He's really like,
yeah.
And yet if you are tall and handsome and everything, you don't have to make any effort at all.
Feels like
somebody,
that, you know.
So that actually when you get talking to somebody who is gorgeous and has never has to make any effort to kind of get to know people, they're not as interesting because they've never had to try hard because they just get seen. But you are so brilliant. And when you, I love taking you to places because I'm always like, here's Michael, I'm just going to let him impress you and you're going to come up to me in half an hour and tell me how brilliant he is. And that happens every time.
If I can't do it with words, I've always got the caterpillar and the backspin flip out on TV.
Oh my God, people, his breakdancing is something else. You've got to stop doing that though.
Yeah,
neck.
I've got a sore neck. Yeah, I can't have it. On that subject, I saw me and my mate Andy went out on Saturday night. We got these tickets to see Paul Weller.
Creepy. So, I think what's important, because you can't review that because nobody else can
get
it, but you can tell us about it. But I want to know, how did you find the tickets?
So on Paul Weller HQ on Instagram, which is obviously the office of Paul Weller, just said, Paul's performing tomorrow night in Notting Hill at Akram Village, which is just by Portobello Road. £12 a ticket if you're interested. I was like, what?
What?
So he was
too good to be true.
Yeah, he was supporting a friend of his called Kevin Haynes, who had written some records and was putting out an EP, and he was launching it there. And Paul had done one of the songs on the EP with him, and I think he just agreed, well, I'll be your opening slot.
Unbelievable.
So me and Andy went down there, £12 a ticket. He did like a 1 hour set and with a full band.
Yeah, you thought it was just going to be Paul and a guitar.
Yeah, he brought everybody. We had a flute player, a saxophone player, two guitarists. I think his son was on bass actually as well. He's got a lot of kids, Paul Weller. You can't see me, but I'm doing the action of playing bass. Anyway, it was brilliant. But the other point I was going to get after that, me and Andy went for a few drinks in Notting Hill, and the size of the men in West London was outrageous.
Oh, yeah, you said.
They were enormous. And
there was a sort of nightclub.
There was a nightclub vibe going on at the Electric, yeah. And I thought, oh, this will be quite good fun. All of the men were over 6'3", giants.
And not having to impress anybody, they just are impressive.
And I was saying to Andy, can you imagine how dull these guys are? And the women were like pouring all over them. And then they tried to dance a bit, and I thought, look at this guy, can't even dance, he can barely walk.
Yeah, you can dance. You
know? So I did a few shimmies, you know, but I wasn't interested. I'm not interested in
from the ladies. Yeah, I don't mind you getting the attention.
Yeah, okay.
Just makes me proud.
But tall men, you know, like...
Who'd want to be tall?
Yeah, not me. I think they die earlier as well, tall people. The heart's got to work a lot harder to
feel better.
Pump blood.
It's like a big dog.
Body. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like a big dog, yeah.
Big dogs.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I would like to quickly talk about something else that Joel told me about, and that is the Genius Lyrics website.
Oh, yeah.
So talk us through it.
It's a genius website.
Oh, well done. Yeah,
thank you. I'm a natural. It essentially takes...
Don't try and be better than us, Joel.
Okay. Like, okay.
You're just a guest on this podcast.
Feeling insecure.
Like, yeah, me too.
And he's tall.
It takes lyrics from songs, any songs that you can think of. I mean, if they're lesser known, then people might not have submitted meanings for them, but essentially they take lyrics from songs and then people can go on there, highlight the lyrics, and then, a bit like Wikipedia, submit what they think the lyrics mean.
Yes.
And essentially you can find whatever song you really like. If you're a bit confused about some of the words and what they mean, you can go on there and people will have submitted kind of ideas as to what they think the song means and what it means. And I've just found, like, I found some songs where, I probably guessed by now, I listen to a lot of Radiohead, and a lot of their lyrics can be quite confusing. I mean, they all try and tell a story, but they can be quite confusing. I go on there and it just lays it all out for you, like, on a blank canvas, and like, you can just dissect it.
But this isn't
really
from the
nice.
Band. This is people's interpretation or things that the snippets that they've heard or picked up from somewhere, or an interview that Tom's done.
It's far more interesting, because then it's all still, there's still that level
doubt.
Of speculation.
Yeah.
There's not like a, this is exactly what it is.
Yes, yes.
That's it.
Yeah. I feel like that's the art of a good song, is that it means lots of different things to lots of different people. What I enjoy about this genius lyrics is that
it's called genius.com.
Genius.com. And it opens up the song for your interpretation, because you might only think in a two-dimensional way about the song, but after reading a few other comments, you go, oh, hang on a second, I've got this all wrong, you know. And I think that's what we were talking about with movies earlier as well. It's the same thing, how you interpret movies. You're not necessarily, if you just watch the story and take the story, then you're missing 50% of the film, essentially.
Yeah.
You know? So what have you put in there, anything?
I just put Creep in Radiohead.
Creep.
So it gives you the lyrics, 2 million people have seen that, and it also gives you the album, and I guess all the lyrics from there. I mean, in a million ways, this is fantastic. So you've got lyrics to every song, so you could karaoke if you wanted to, or if you're playing the piano, and at the end it says about, which kind of tells you what the song potentially is about, or how...
So the about section is literally just all of the information that that you can get from individual lines condensed into one big kind of biography about the song
itself.
It's
bloody brilliant. It's such a great idea. And the other thing, I think, because you two as well introduced me to listening to a song lyrically, because as you guys know, I'm so into my dance music. And dance music is rhythmic, not lyrical. Most of the time, they just repeat a line over and over and over again. It doesn't really mean it. Can you feel it? You know, is a song, one of my favourites. And it just says, can you feel it, 1,000 times, and some sirens. A bit like with 500 Days of Summer, if you think about the editing before you see the film, it helps you enjoy it more.
It puts
if
it you, in a whole different light. Yeah,
so if you go a little bit deeper into a song, like even if it's an old song that you really love, there's a song by Jerry Rafferty that I am literally right down the line. Jerry Rafferty, shut up. Put the car in park. Why have I never heard that before? It's so weird. It's on the Baker Street album and I didn't know it. Anyway, you know, to look up a song like that and think, you enjoy it more when you listen to it, because when you're listening to it, you're thinking about the words in a much deeper way, which brings you more enjoyment. And Michael's, we've lost your dad.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah,
he's gone into the genius wormhole.
Well, it's quite an interesting little quote here about Creep, that it says, I have a real problem being a man in the 90s, which is always fascinating. So, you know, when you take a snapshot of what somebody was like in a particular decade, any man with any sensitivity or conscience towards the opposite sex would have a problem to actually assert yourself in a masculine way without looking like you're in a hard rock band is a very difficult thing to do. It comes back to music we write, which is not effeminate, but it's brutal in its arrogance. It's one of the things I'm always trying is to assert a sexual persona, and on the other hand, trying desperately to negate it at the same time. Yeah, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Creep, I guess, is a very particular song.
I'd never thought of it like that. Ever. Yeah. I would never have thought of it like that.
I know. I love the website.
But thank you
for that. And
there's
loads of songs that I don't... that Charlie Brown song from Coldplay. Yeah. I have no idea what that's about or why it's called Charlie Brown.
Let me pop that in there.
What's going on?
I mean, I was talking about that the other day. What the hell it means. And obviously Charlie Brown is Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown's the fictional Peanuts character.
Yeah.
And there's references to different cartoons and child cartoons in there, like The Lost Boys is a Peter Pan reference.
Yes. Of course, yeah, yeah.
The person I was with, Sid, like, pointed that out, but we still, like, we didn't know what, like, we didn't know what that meant. It's just something that was there.
The
like
Lost
we
Boys
couldn't
meet, yeah. Of course.
And
yeah,
took what they offered me, which and I
so
guess
you think
like,
that's a reference to
that would be a reference Peter to Peter Pan, yeah.
Chris Martin said about Charlie Brown that I know our lyrics are a bit shit, but the ones for Charlie Brown, I like them a lot.
Yeah. Genius.com, that is.
It is a very, very, very good
it's
site.
It's an amazing website. You have to allocate at least an hour
done.
To just
yes,
delve into it. Yeah.
That was a very, very good shout. Deborah James. Mm-hmm. You and I met Deborah James together.
Yes, I did a hair many times.
We met working for Rivita because Rivita were talking about fibre and how important fibre is in our lives. And Deborah James came along to talk to us about the importance of fibre in relation to bowel cancer. And then we had Megan Rossi there talking about...
Oh, was that where you met Megan Rossi?
Yeah, how to get various different types of fibre in our diet. But Deborah James, I know that you and me were both completely blown away by her. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, you know, we talked about her for kind of days afterwards, just saying, she literally touched and changed the lives of so many people. And she saved many lives. So she was a woman, at 35 years old, she discovered she had stage 4 bowel cancer. Stage 4 means it's terminal. Mm-hmm. And she was completely polaxed by that because, you know, we don't normally think that those kind of things are going to happen to us until much later in life.
Yeah,
and there she was, 35, 2 young children, and she'd been given less than an 8% chance of surviving 5 years. And she survived for 5 years, and she wrote this book at the time when she was living on borrowed time, and it's called How to Live When You Could Be Dead. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a book to try and help us live our lives as if we were going to die without having to die.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it really made me think a lot about my sister and how I felt after my sister died and how my sister had done a bucket list. And I thought, why are we doing a bucket list for you now? Like, why did we not do a bucket list when you were living and just go, let's do this?
Yeah.
So the living bucket list should be something, you know, that you're not trying to do before you die, just trying to do because you want to do it.
Yeah.
But she talks a lot about, she was funny. She was an educator. She had a real zest for life. And she had a will to live unlike any woman I have ever met. And she was sent home because no more treatment could be given and that I think they'd roughly given her 2 weeks to live.
Yeah.
And even then, she went way past the 2 weeks that the doctors had given her because her will was so strong. And I found her so inspiring. But not only that, she's inspired. A girlfriend of mine's got stage 4 cancer. And she said that she got great comfort from the fact that Deborah outlived the worst prognosis.
Yes.
That
so there was
if
hope.
She could, if Deborah can do it, I can do it. Mm-hmm. And she also has a very strong will to live.
Yes, I know this
and,
person. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just think this is one of those books, whether you've got cancer, whether you haven't got cancer, if you know anybody that has got cancer, it is a life book that you should read. And I quickly want to say that £3 from every book sold in the UK will go to the Bowel Babe Fund, which all money towards cancer research. She, even in her death, she's still raising money for cancer. She is an an amazing, amazing woman. And we will never forget her. She's made an indelible mark on us, I think, as a nation. She's fantastic.
The idea would be that you would read this book if you were suffering or knew somebody who was suffering with cancer, but that's not the point of the book, right?
No, the point of the book is it's for all of us to live a life as richly and as fully as you possibly can.
Because my philosophy on life is that I do have a terminal illness that will kill me.
Yeah, it's life.
It's called life.
Yeah.
It'll definitely kill me.
Yeah.
So what do I want to do?
Yeah,
you know,
I've
already been diagnosed with it and I already know I'm going to die, you know. Mm. And that kind of propels me forward in many ways because I think What could go wrong?
Do you fear death?
No, not at all. Mm. As you know, I've experienced it once. Mm. So, no, I think I fear suffering, but not the death bit. But
I fear suffering a lot more than
you know. I don't want to be in pain or discomfort or.
Do you have that thing that you want to make sure the boys are all right before you go?
Oh yeah, yeah, but they're fine. Like, you know, there's nothing wrong with them. They'll be all right.
I feel like that about. I think Holly would be fine. I think Tilly would be sad, but I think Chester would be broken now.
Yeah.
So I feel like I need to.
You can go hold stick off, around till you can
hold off at least for another 5 years.
That's the trick, isn't it? If you can get your kids in a position where they're fully self-sufficient.
Yes.
And they can move forward.
My poor parents. I wasn't fully self-sufficient for ages.
Yeah.
I mean, I was self-sufficient, but I was a bit of a car crash.
You were pretending. You were.
I was a car crash. Yeah.
You're very self-sufficient now, by the way.
Yes,
I'm very pleased about that. But yeah, I can imagine that that is a great book to read, irrespective of your circumstances or whether you're poorly or not.
I mean,
not
the
poorly,
thing on the back just, says, yeah. Question your life as if it didn't have a tomorrow.
Mm.
Live the way you want to live today.
Because I always think, when if I've got to do something difficult, whatever it might be, you know, whether it's to do with work or relationships or anything like that, I always think, well, I'm going to die anyway, you know, like. This feels like the right thing to do, even though it's extremely difficult.
Mm.
So let's crack on with it, you know. And there's something very sobering about the idea that the worst that can happen is that you're going to die.
Mm.
And you think, well, I'm already dead in many ways, you know. So let's make the best of everything we possibly can, you know. And just because something's hard doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. I think faced with the idea that we're all going to die one day is somehow makes me want to live, you know.
What about you, Joel?
Yeah, what about a young person's perspective?
Yeah.
A young person.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about death? No.
Yeah.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. I feel like it would be negligent to not think about
it. Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, like, I mean, as you said, obviously, your whole life is a form of terminal illness. Mm. But if you were to completely negate that and sort of block the whole idea of death out of your mind, if it was to strike you close in your family, you'd be completely... So I think if you don't consider it upon yourself, you'll never know how to cope with it if it affects you.
Mm.
Not if it comes to you, but if it affects you.
Mm.
So I think young people should especially think about death as well. It's like there's that idea that it's good for kids to get pets.
Yes.
Because if you get a pet, if you get a dog at birth, dogs, and depending on what breed of dog, it'll probably live to around between like 10 and 12. Okay. If a kid's like 10 to 12 years old and experiences are really close, that teaches them very early on how to cope with a form of death and loss. And like I'd never really had anything like that because we didn't really have many pets. And then when we had Ronnie and she died last year...
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that hit like a truckload.
Oh,
yeah. But then, yeah.
But it's taught you something,
then,
right?
Yeah. And then we had other passings like Gran Lily.
Oh,
and I was able to cope with that like
better.
Way better because I acknowledged like the life she had and the joy she brought to mine and it only made me comfortable. Like,
okay.
There are different types of grief as well, aren't there? Because there's a grief for someone you've known your whole life, like Lily, but who had lived a full and amazing life and touched so many people.
And you
think, okay, well, she's gone and I'm really going to miss her because she was such a big part.
Mm. And then there's grief of something that you never got to experience life with.
Yeah, yeah, so there was like Ronnie who you think she was too young.
Yeah,
right?
I was ready to be about 25 years old and come back home and she'd still be there.
Yeah.
And then to be like 15 and she was already gone.
Yeah, it was was really terrible.
Mm. I got a dwarf rabbit when I was 10 years old and it froze to death in the garden when I went away for Christmas. I know. I did get the neighbour to look after it, but God almighty, it absolutely destroyed me because not only had it died, I felt like I'd killed it. You know? I mean, I don't know whether he was supposed to put it in the house
what an amazing
or what,
you
know? But it was a hell of an experience. Lesson. But I still think about young Samson now, a little grey dwarf rabbit. Oh God, I only had him for about 3 months, you know. I don't know what the hell I was doing with a rabbit, you know, but it was a serious education.
Let's be quite clear, dwarf rabbits are really cute.
Well, we got another dwarf rabbit after that. And anything I could get my hands on that was dwarf, I was like, we got a dwarf hamster.
Yes, I just wanted, like, have you seen the dwarf hamsters?
We had
they're
dwarf
so
hamsters.
Sweet.
They're tiny little things, aren't they? So, cuter the better, basically.
Yeah.
But, I've got one picture of me with Samson. I'll have to dig it out. Remember that thing?
Need to put that on the pod.
Mm. Yeah, okay, well, see if I can dig it out. It'll be in a box of photos somewhere. But there was something about your porn star name was something to do with the name of your first
pet. Oh, my God, Samson and your first road.
Yeah.
Go on.
Samson Dalehead.
Oh, my God, that sounds so good. There's something about the word
brilliant.
Head that's porn star,
that's
isn't it?
Yeah, crikey.
Mine is, well, it depends on if it's my first ever pet.
Yeah, I think it's got
to
be.
Or whether it's my first adult pet. But if it's my first ever pet, it's Ginny Benbow.
Ooh, Ginny Benbow. Yeah,
that's really
I'm going to Google
good.
That, see what comes up. Sounds like there might be a MILF somewhere on Pornhub called that, Ginny Bell.
Boy, Benbow.
Benbow.
Okay. Do you know Benbow Road
is
in Hammersmith?
Yeah. Mm. Yes, I know.
I've taken you down it, haven't I?
That's a euphemism right there somewhere.
I've taken you down the Benbow.
Taking me up the Benbow, yeah.
Oh my God, Joel, I'm sorry. I don't know where that went.
We've got off piece. We've got one last thing to talk about, ladies and gentlemen. It's a TV show that we've started watching, and it's one of my most favourite stories of the Hollywood era of the 1970s.
Yes!
Yeah, now, you're going to hate me for this, first of all, but it is on Paramount Plus. Only.
Oh, yeah, I hated you for that for a few seconds.
But you get 7 days free if you sign up.
And then you could quickly watch it in 7 days.
And then you could watch it in 7 days and get rid of it. Or Yellowstone is also on Paramount Plus, and everybody I know is saying Yellowstone is a must watch. This is the thing with Kevin Costner in it. I don't know anything else about it other than the trailer looked good, and I've never heard somebody say this is not good. Anyway, this TV show I'm talking about is called The Offer, and The Offer is the making of The Godfather, which was a film that was horrifically difficult to make and obviously went on to be one of the greatest films of all time.
It's brilliant because it makes you immediately want to go and watch The Godfather.
Yes. So, but that would be a good idea, I would say, for people. If you've not watched The Godfather recently, it might be worth watching that film and then watching The Offer. But there's a very big, lively character in The Offer, and it's this chap called Bobby Evans. Now, a while back, we talked about the documentary The Kid Stays in the Picture, and The Kid Stays in the Picture is a documentary about Bobby Evans. So I kind of know the nuts and bolts of this story, but it's actually written from the perspective of the producer, who I think is called Al Ruddy. Al Ruddy was...
Yes, Ruddy.
Yeah, was he was a computer engineer at Rand. And the reason I know about Rand, because it's in all those Adam Curtis documentaries.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, Rand was this amazing computer place, that really existed, that was developing game theory and stuff like that to deal with the Russians. Like, it took data from all sorts of different sources. And this is in the 70s when computer data, I guess, was thin on the ground, and tried to predict, you know, the markets, tried to predict what economies were doing around the world and all that stuff. So Rand is just an amazing kind of complex business anyway. So anyway, he worked at Rand.
Clever guy.
Hated it. Really clever guy, but was desperate to produce movies. He met a few people, and then he hijacked Bobby Evans at a meeting and begged him to let him produce.
I've got
something.
To say, he's hypnotic in this part, Miles Teller.
Oh, Miles Teller's brilliant in it, isn't he? And the guy playing Bobby Evans is called Matthew Good.
Yeah,
he's an English actor.
I love him.
But God, he has nailed Bobby Evans. The voice, the clothes, everything about it is so good. Charlie Blumfeld is played by the guy that we know a little bit called Bern Gorman.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays this Jewish guy who Andy's done a bit of research on. And his whole backstory is amazing. Jewish immigrant into America, ends up creating Gulf and Western, which owns Paramount, but loads of other businesses. This guy came to New York with nothing and creates a billion-dollar empire out of nothing. So even his story is bloody amazing. It is the story of them trying to piece together The Godfather and put it out as a movie. It's the most successful book around at that time. And then, of course, it's who we're going to get to direct it. He's only got a $4 million budget, and films were probably being made for about $15 million back in those days, big movies, you know. So he's got to try and make a brilliant movie out of a brilliant book with $4 million, and he gets Francis Ford Coppola on board. And at the moment, we're up to episode 3, which is where they're trying to get the actors to play Michael Corleone, which is played by...
Al Pacino.
Al Pacino, and they're trying to find the Don, which they want Marlon Brando for. But there is no way they've got the budget for Brando. And Bobby Evans hates Al Pacino and is refusing point blank to let him in this movie at all. So this Al Ruddy guy is trying to piece together this movie under a whole bunch of obstacles everywhere, and one of the obstacles being the mafia itself. Hate the book, The Godfather, and do not want this film to be made. And there's a character in The Godfather called Johnny Fontaine, which is loosely based on Frank Sinatra, and Sinatra's read the book, thinks that this is based on him, and wants the film dead, does not want to be portrayed as Johnny Fontaine at all. And no matter how much they try and convince everybody in the mafia that it's not Frank Sinatra, you literally can't escape the fact that it is.
Like, it is.
Yes, I know, I know. But I cannot get enough of this TV show. It is perfect on every level. I think it rates 8.7 on IMDb.
Wow.
Anything over 8 is bloody epic. But I think there's about 10 or 12 episodes of it, or, yeah, maybe 10 episodes of it. Do not hesitate. Absolutely. Go and get Paramount Plus for a week. Watch the first few episodes and tell me what you think.
I've got a feeling Paramount Plus is going to...
Could do well, couldn't
it? It's going to do well.
It's also directed by Dexter Fletcher.
But yes, I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and produced, I think, and quite a lot of it's written by him as well.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? So he's been a movie.
I think that's why there are so many Brits in the cast.
Exactly, and there's a lot of people in there that he's worked with before. I think that he's drawn in, but all of it's just
very, 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 very good.
Very good. So, absolutely, go and watch the trailer or do whatever it is you want to do. But you will not be disappointed if you like the movie business, especially that golden era of Spielberg and Scorsese and Polanski and all them lot. This is all in there, basically. It's absolutely
great. It's a
must-watch.
It's brilliant.
And there's some great little scenes. The guy playing Sinatra is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've noticed, there's Mia Farrow sat next to him. Yeah, yeah, with the little short hair and everything. So, there's loads of little nuggets in there, which are absolutely great. I'm really glad you're enjoying this, by the way, this offer thing, because we're going to watch an episode
tonight. Yeah, we are, yeah. I'm really enjoying it.
Marvellous. And you'll enjoy it as well, Joel, I think. It's
great. We've probably only got time for like one or two shout-outs.
Yes, okay. I need to dig the shout-outs out, because my iPad I've left at work. Oh, so Joy, 37 minutes ago, has just messaged us.
What?
She said, you need to watch I Came By on Netflix with Hugh Bonneville and Kelly MacDonald.
Oh, I love both of them.
An edge-of-the-seat film. Oh, I Came By. We jot that down somewhere.
Right,
that sounds great. Joy, which is Joy _ Itterod. Claire, Davina and Michael, great to have the podcast back. I wanted to recommend a film called Good Luck to You, Leo Grande.
I've seen this advertised in tons of tube station cinemas.
I'd love to see this is Emma Thompson, who obviously dates a kind of young guy
and
they have a great old time.
It's really funny because she goes, there was a line in it where she says something like, but I mean, am I the oldest person you've ever slept with? And he goes, no. 82. She's like, oh god.
Did you ever see Don't Mess with the Zohan?
No.
Really?
No.
Oh my god, have you seen it?
I feel like I have.
It's Adam Sandler. Mm. Yeah, Adam Sandler plays like an Israeli special forces guy who comes to America to become a hairdresser. And he opens up a hair salon and has sex with all of his clients. And of course, they're queuing up around the block. There's loads of these old women going in for perms and stuff like that almost on a weekly basis. Because he, you know, has a go with them over the backwash and stuff like that. And it's just hilarious. We must watch that. You've got to see if Chester's seen it as well. It's
won't have seen it.
Okay. But the fact that he's a hairdresser, you know, it's a long-standing joke that I always go, oh, what's your name? I go, I am the Zohan. Nobody laughs. Emma Thompson and Daryl McCormick. It's about an older woman who hires a sex worker to explore the pleasures of sex, which she's previously never experienced, and her learning to accept the beauty of her body. It's available to rent and buy on Amazon. And I think you'll both love it. We've talked about this before, so I would definitely like to see it.
Yes, me too.
Don't think we need to put Chester through that, though.
No. Not together.
Maybe you and
Chester can watch it, but...
Hello. It's so lovely to hear you two are back again. I have a recommendation. Two things. Taste by Stanley Tucci. Tucci?
Oh, yes.
Tucci?
His cookery book.
Yes, I keep seeing it in the windows.
It's not all recipes, so... Somebody was going to buy that for Chester for his birthday, and then they looked through it and saw that it was a lot of autobiographical material as well, which would be nice for someone like us.
Yeah, yeah.
But Chester, you know, doesn't really know
So it says, fantastic book. And then watch the show on iPlayer, Searching for Italy. I think that's the name of the whole show, Searching for Italy. Is fabulous. If you love travel and good food, and he's rather cool too. He is so cool. I was laughing out loud on my journey this morning listening about Yogi Brian. Oh, I've loved Yogi Brian this week.
He's absolutely brilliant. Yeah, Sit the fuck down, fuckers.
Yeah, he's bloody great. Him and Steve Dadbot need to collaborate. Yeah, right. It'd be good, wouldn't it? Good collaboration, because they're both a bit like bit chippy and a bit cheeky, you know. People must have wondered what was going on. She was laughing out loud with her headphones on. Well done. I love seeing people laugh out loud with their headphones on. Last one, great episode this week. Although, just before listening to it, was listening to a couple of older ones, was listening to your Jubilee one on the day. Oh, they were listening to the Jubilee episode on the day the Queen died.
Wow.
It's quite good, isn't it? Well, you know, good in a way.
Wow.
Then your Sage coffee one, while making myself coffee using my Sage. Try Rave subscription coffee. I love it. Ooh, oh. Rave. Ooh, that sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah. Are we going to get high?
always a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
Joel Douglas. This is really good because I think we should do this as a thing.
I would really, really like to.
Yeah, niche things that you can bring to us that we wouldn't know about.
When you say a thing, you mean like not every week, though, don't you?
No, but you can save up things and think, oh, this would be good for the podcast, because it's like, it's things that our generation might not know about, but we would really get something from.
I'd be happy to like kind of bring in stuff for potentially recommendations for like listeners, younger kids and stuff.
And presents. We could do a Christmas teenage special.
I could happily get
What presents you want for Christmas?
And then yes.
Oh, that would be double.
So helpful. Hmm.
Joel's got his CBT motorbike scooter lesson thing on Sunday, so we're going to wish you all the very best with that. I don't think it's a test as such. No. It's just training.
No, yeah. I mean, I hope not.
You know, I hope that you don't fall off, basically, because
three of my GCSEs will prove that I'm not incredible at sitting exams.
Yes, you know, you could sit on something with two wheels. Mm-hmm.
That should be really funny.
All right, he's not that funny.
He's really funny.
Jesus. I mean, most people aren't interested in what young people think, so don't get above your station. You know, like, young people don't know anything, you know. So, but it has been...
loved having you on.
Well, she's loved
everyone.
Really? I've kind of liked it, but it's been... I'm kind of easy about it. Honest,
I know,
He's a bit worried.
I know, God. And congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will be back next week with more recommendations, and we're going to see something this week.
Yes.
So we might talk about that next week. Controversial.
Possibly. Yeah, controversial.
Ooh.
Love you.
Love you too.
No, I meant to the audience.
To the audience. Yeah. Okay. Jesus. Yes, I love you all too, by the way. Yes. Okay. Great.
Your face when I said that was so funny. Like, what?
Said it out loud. What?